Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It is Saturday, April 26, 2014. I'm Harley Schlanger and I will be your host. Over the last several weeks on the LaRouche Show, we've presented the story of the incredible existential crisis that mankind is facing. On the one side, you have a war danger driven by the forces of the British Empire, the British monarchy, through their puppet, Barack Obama, the erstwhile president of the United States. And on the other side, driving the desperation toward war is the collapse of the financial system. And as we've reviewed over the last couple of weeks, this is a war drive which took off with the first Bush administration, with the invasion of Iraq, but then got totally brought to another level with George W. Bush and the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Now, Obama has changed nothing, and it was after the Libyan war, which was an undeclared war, an illegal, unconstitutional war, after the assassination of Muammar Gaddafi, that Lyndon LaRouche warned that the real target was Russia. And we've seen that over the last year and a half, the escalation in Syria, in which Obama has put the United States on the side of Al-Qaeda. And now in Ukraine, where the United States orchestrated a coup with NATO and the European Union, putting in power a group which was largely controlled militarily by a gang of thugs and Nazis, and that group has gone for war with Russia. It's part of an expansion of NATO into Eastern Europe. And this is what Obama represents. This is what the neocons, such as Victoria Nuland, have wanted, as well as the liberal imperialists such as Susan Rice and Samantha Powers. And now we're seeing Obama in Asia on the other side of this war drive with his threats against China. Now, last week, we had an interview with the Executive Intelligence Review's Paul Gallagher when we went through in detail the financial crisis, the bubble from 2008 that popped, the creation of a new bubble, and the fact that the only thing that's been done since 2008 is more bailouts combined with fascist austerity, not against the bankers. God forbid under Obama we would touch the bankers' right to loot the planet. Instead, the bailouts have enabled the bankers to hold on to trillions of dollars of bad debt, while populations have been subjected to brutal austerity, killer austerity in the case of Greece and Spain, and now we're seeing that as part of the Ukraine package. Now, in both these cases, the driver for war is the British Empire and a commitment to genocide, and Obama is playing the role of a dutiful puppet in provoking Russia toward war and in protecting the banks from Glass-Steagall and the solution. Today we're going to talk about another aspect of this policy of genocide, one which I hate to say it, but is not yet evident to the average person who may have heard about a drought, may oppose the shutdown of nuclear energy, but hasn't been able to put two and two together and realize that what we're dealing with is a deliberate destruction of the physical economy in the United States, with immediate grave implications for you, our listeners, in the form of a lack of water and a lack of food that's coming right down the highway right at you. So today we're going to have my co-host on the LaRouche Show, who's one of the leading experts in the world on food production and its relationship to physical economy, Marcia Mary Baker. So Marcia, welcome to the program.
Okay. Hi, Harley.
Now, I'd like you to start with just an updated picture of the drought and the relationship of the drought and also the crazy energy policy of biofuels and fracking, the relationship of that to the impending food shortage. And when we say food shortage, we don't mean slight increase in prices and less variety. We mean you may be at a point sometime in a month or two or three from now where there's very little food available to you. So, Marcia, why don't you start by giving us an update on where things stand?
Well, I'll begin with the physical conditions, but then to reiterate what we can discuss later. Yeah, you'll see, I'm sure, in the cold case at the supermarket in a few months, there might be a big sign because of the Western drought. We don't have lettuce this week. You'll see that. And you can already see the equivalent without having a sign in prices going up for beef and other things. But first, the physical condition of our Western states, where a great deal of what food is produced in the United States came to be concentrated, especially in California and Texas, but also our Western states include the northern high plains of the famous Dakotas and eastern Montana. There's chaos there. And the April 22nd, if you look on the web under U.S. Drought Monitor, that's the name of a weekly map that'll pop up, and it'll show areas that are in various degrees of drought. And this is just a very dramatic. All of California, every single county, a great deal of the Southwest, western Texas, eastern New Mexico, is acutely dry. It's and so therefore, you have a situation where you've had large weather cycles where you could say the sun is less active now, so the question of sunspots and cyclical activity is all conspiring that you have less precipitation in this part of the world, the southwestern part of North America, same in northern Mexico, but at a time when we have for decades not built up our defenses. We should have been building what was proposed as of the 1950s and 60s, large water conveyances to take surplus water from the northwest part of our continent, from Alaska, the Yukon, northern British Columbia, channel it southward. And we should have been taking our leaders had intended to do in the 1950s, once we harnessed the atom, use its power to desalinate seawater. You'd be doing that on the Gulf of Mexico coast, the Great Pacific coast, the coastline surrounding the peninsula of Florida, which has its problems with water.
And Marcia, just to make this point really clear, in the 50s and 60s, there were a number of projects, both for nuclear power and for water, and this was the intention, the stated intention of President Kennedy to make sure that there were a renewal, really, of what Franklin Roosevelt had done to ensure that infrastructure was a priority.
Yes, Franklin Roosevelt, we know, people listening know many of the famous projects, the multiple dams on the beautiful Tennessee River and its tributary system, the great big dam on the Colorado in near Las Vegas, the Columbia River systems. Franklin Roosevelt, under him, really developed that. And then, after the Second World War was finished, we had every intention to really do that on a continental scale and harness the power of the atom. As I said, there were projects out in the southwest of the United States, jointly run with Mexico, for desalination, and all of it was stopped. Let's come around to the crisis you're saying. In various ways, you mentioned the British Empire. The Wall Street City of London and its networks said, oh, it's too expensive. So fake environmentalist movement of the Greens said, oh, you will harm the environment by messing with Mother Nature. Dams are no good, and the last thing we want to do is desalinate seawater. So all of this conspired to a situation where as a nation, we had something like an intention for 400 nuclear power plants to be built by 2000. And this was as of the 1950s and 1960s. And we had built about 104, and then the whole thing as of the 1970s and 80s was stopped by this anti-nation state, anti-human movement I just described. Mexico to our south, especially under President López Portillo, had a plan for at least 20 nuclear power plants. Probably I'm thinking more like 200. I can't remember the program. But this was the basis of our foreign policy of collaboration with our neighbors. We were collaborating with Canada on the prospects of the North American Water and Power Alliance to collect water that would otherwise go into the Arctic and the Northern Pacific, useless.
And you mentioned Mexico. The major projects for Mexico to bring water from the south up to the Sonora Desert, Pino and Pligon, they actually started digging those before they were shut down by the International Monetary Fund and the environmentalists.
Exactly. And they're great. You can go to Mexico, and it's as if you're going to the ancient Mideast societies, like in Yemen, in Sheba, where the irrigation system was abandoned in the Arabian Peninsula. You can go to the state of Durango in Mexico and see abandoned irrigation ditches because the water wasn't provided for. And that's what's happening now on a mass scale in the West. The great state water project of California, with multiple dams, the aqueducts, central canal to serve the Central Valley, not to mention the Imperial Valley, which is to the south, served by the Colorado River systems. These were all built with the presumption that yet more would come in the future, but the future was cut off. That's what we're looking at now. What's happened is these systems, you'll see that in reservoirs throughout Central and West Texas with no water in them. You'll see reservoirs in California with no water in them. And an unheard of thing is that both the State Water Project of California, which serves some 23 million people with drinking water and other sanitation water and other supplies and farm districts, said earlier this year, we will not fulfill any of our contracts this year. The Federal Water Project, it's run by the Bureau of Reclamation, and it said, we can't supply water. Now, when it rained a little bit recently in California, not insufficient and spotty, I think, Harley, in the last 10 days, the State Water Project said, okay, we can give you maybe 5% of what we had contracted for, and that'll be next September 1st. Okay, now put yourself in the position of a farm operator. And you have some big, rotten plantation-style farming out there. That's been part of what's happened because of the globalization of the world under NAFTA, the North American Free Trade, under that British idea of free trade. But I don't care right now, big or small, meaning family-sized farmers or big rotten plantation-sized farmers, they ain't farming. You're going to have something like 3 million out of 9 million acres, a million maybe in the Central Valley, 800,000 acres anyway, not planted. And so you're going to have 15%, if not worse, 15% less rice from out there. You're going to have up to 30% less corn. Now, these are important, but where it really shows up also is the fruits and vegetables, the 90-some percent of all the fresh broccoli in our country, because frozen broccoli we're stealing from Mexico. We're stealing their water. Look at the name on the package at your school cafeteria or in your supermarket. We're importing water like crazy from water-short countries. So Mexico, we import Brussels sprouts, broccoli, and everything else. But 40 to 50% of the fresh produce we count on, and up to 90% of certain things, come from California. A lot of it comes from the Central Valley, and that's where a great deal of it is not being planted.
Also, Marcia, the Imperial Valley, which is another major source in California, had its water shut off 2 years ago when there was a decision made to provide water to the city of San Diego rather than to the farmers because they said there wasn't enough. And again, this is the effect of the drought, the lessened snowfalls, and you know, there are certain projects in place, as you mentioned, but they don't have water right now.
Yes, and the other thing is, it's a headless horseman as far as potential to do something about it. San Diego's building a very large desalination plant. Well, fine, it's not nuclear and so forth, and it will serve a lot of people. But this is such a scale, you're not going to solve it by some place that fortunately has some money right now. You're having, especially the small towns, the trailer park towns that don't have the long history and urban infrastructure, they are already running out of water. There are at least 48 towns in Texas for which the clock is ticking, that they will completely run out of water by the end of the year, unless a miracle occurs. We hope for a miracle. I do, but you can't plan on that. In California, a little town, I think it's called Cambria after the Welsh, completely ran out of water in the last 10 days. And there's a list of 17 the state water people of California put out. California has, I think, some water truck delivery contingency systems ready, so everyone doesn't have to move out en masse. So, as you said, you don't get this in your nightly news. Well, we know what the nightly news is composed of. It's evil, lying whore. So we'll just leave that aside.
Well, but here's an important point on this, because I think what you laid out is the picture of devastation that people should know about. Now, one person who knows about this is President Obama, because he doesn't rely on the nightly news to get his reports. He knows there's no water. He knows there's a shutdown. And he went out to California, and what did he do? He basically blamed human beings, civilization, for depleting the water supplies and offered a pittance of sums to help farmers get through the crisis, basically provide a little bit of food money for them. So this is where you begin to see the evil intent on top of what's coming from the lessened activity from the sun.
Exactly. And he even reiterated that his administration is going to do everything to reduce all the BS about greenhouse gases from cow farts. And it was just completely crazy. A month later, after Obama's visit in California, the White House did put out its declaration of how we have to commit to this green insanity. Now, let me switch it again then. That's the backdrop. It's massive. It's in Texas. We didn't go into it. We could talk about the cattle herd is contracting because ranchers can't afford to either buy the water, truck it in, or buy the feed, truck it in, or they can't graze where the grasses are parched. It's very disrupted. And this...
There's no corn available because it's going into biofuels.
Yes. So that raises... Biofuels is one aspect, and now we can get into yet other aspects. But biofuels is in this circumstance, speaks for itself. It's insane to be taking these livestock rations, and a lot of the field corn, at least 10% of the field corn does get processed into your Cheerios, by the way. So all this, you know, there's the direct polenta. Where does it come from? So anyway, to do this at a time of crisis then shows you the nature of the Obama administration. It's a patsy for the international network of it's Wall Street and City of London serving the interests of this British Empire. The Queen has stated it, desire to depopulate the world and reduce the means of existence, food, water, and which the world depends. Now come back here, and that's where come back to the United States. That's where the fact of having reverted to an oil and gas economy, canceled the nuclear power intention and building as an economy comes into play in very, we had a little interruption, but I'm still here. I hope you are. Comes into play, very interplay with the existence of the drought in the West in an acute way, because raised at the outset the question of hydraulic fracking. We'll get into that as a technology. But what's happened in the recent decades is that the operatives, like, I'll name names, Dick Cheney, Warren Buffett, and as well as Obama himself, and there are others, have been part of pushing a situation where the key parts of American infrastructure, rail, the pipeline system, anyway, it was deregulated in the course of this going against nuclear so that you've had a buy-in of a number of people, like Warren Buffett owns Burlington Northern Santa Fe because of a strategic purchase in recent years. It's through Berkshire Hathaway, his company. Similarly, he owns a certain amount of the gas pipeline system after the famous California debacle in 2000, 2001, 2002 of energy and electricity supply. So you have a situation where you the a certain technology which has come along that is for decades, maybe 60 years or more, certain oil geologists and gas drillers know that if you have an underground formation that has oil or gas in it, and you, but it's permeable, it isn't like an open underground pool, it needs shattered, and the oil and gas will come out. This has been done in various forms. But in recent years, an additional element was added to this, where you could have, you could drill down into the ground vertically, then you could go horizontally and do the same kind of shattering. If you send down compressed water and sand and certain chemicals, they do this a bit with CO2. It takes more infrastructure. So the technology is technology, but what happened is it's been used as the to be declared as the great oil and gas boom now, the fracking boom of the United States. And Obama and the rest of the gang are using this to say this the U.S. will rule the world. It'll be the superpower. We can back down Russia regarding supplying gas to Europe. We can.
Marcia, I just want to interrupt for a second here to say that one of the ironies here is that they're talking about the U.S. supplanting Russia and Saudi Arabia. But what you just described, and I'm sure we'll fill this in more, but we're turning the United States into a desert. We actually are becoming more like Saudi Arabia with cheap labor, oil and gas, which is coming from the production of food. We're going to be dependent on other nations. And I think it's very important for people to realize this is the intention of the British monarchy. And I think when we talk about fracking, and I want you to get back to that in a second, but I just wanted to introduce that irony because people have to realize becoming like Saudi Arabia is not good.
Yeah, yeah. In other words, okay, citizens, go backwards and like it because we rule, this talk about the aristocratic sovereignty. We rule, you eat it. So yeah. So what's happened is it's not as if some decades ago at the time we were planning more nuclear power, desalination, more long-distance conveyance of water. Our engineers were great in California. They could have developed these aqueducts, canals, and others you need to bring to collaborate with Canada, bring the water down. We at the time, we would also have been there's nothing wrong with oil and gas. You would have had plenty more pipelines. You would have, as we once had, regulated electricity generating plants, we had regulated gas pipelines, we had regulated railroads, and in the private interests in each of those areas could make a profit and the nation would have a future. But no, once you deregulated it all and Wall Street money came in, it wasn't a free market, it was a rigged market. So you now have a situation where the oil, and there's been an increase of oil and fracking. Just briefly, you understand that the big forefront fracking states first were Texas and nearby and Oklahoma and so forth. Pennsylvania, that's the Marcellus Shale Formation. And then North Dakota with Bakken Oil Formation. Pennsylvania, you tend to get gas. Texas, you get either oil or gas. And these went gung-ho so that the U.S. oil and natural gas output has increased very rapidly in the last few years. But, okay, folks, how are you going to transport that anywhere? Well, the Warren Buffett monopoly interest types own how you transport it. We are now transporting a great deal of the oil by rail, up to 48% of all the rail freight carried in our nation every year is now strictly oil and coal, and that's and the big and coal is going down relative to oil. The oil spills, everyone listening here must know one that stands out in their mind, are terrible, spectacular fires, this kind of thing. And now we get
Marcia,
to the food
just
point.
To add an anecdotal thing to this, I was talking with your husband who's out in West Texas right now working on Keisha Rogers' campaign, and he's in the area of the Panhandle, which was once a very important grain belt. And what he reported is they saw train car after train car with fracked oil and gas. No food whatsoever
was
being transported on the rail lines.
Yeah, and that rail line in West Texas, that's strictly Burlington Northern Santa Fe. That's not super.
Yeah.
You know, we've contracted. There are seven major companies, and we deregulated to one. And so go to the north a bit, to the northern plains, to the Bakken oil fields up in North Dakota and nearby East Montana. And that's served by Burlington Northern Santa Fe, Burlington Northern a bit, and Canadian Pacific, and a bit of Canadian National up in Minnesota. So you have trains rolling through carrying the oil out, carrying the sand, especially from Wisconsin, into the oil and gas fracking areas to build the platform, to go in the fracking fluid, actually. And otherwise, you're carrying aggregate for cement, concrete, whatever you need to build the rigs, platforms. And so we have we developed in the last few months an acute shortage of rail capacity to carry out last year's crop from this area. Now you're talking in the north there about wheat, the wheat crop. They do have corn up there. You have sugar from sugar beets. You have beans. North Dakota is the biggest producer in the on the continent of what they call all the different kinds of dry edible beans, they're called, not beans for oil, but navy beans for your baked beans, okay? And they're just, the bins are overflowing because the Warren Buffett, Burlington Northern Santa Fe, I hope you see all their ads on TV about how Warren Buffett loves trains. They don't have the cars. They are 2 months behind in some products with the cars that were promised.
Didn't you report that the winter wheat crop should have been harvested now, or it's been harvested, but it can't go anywhere?
No, that would be last year's. The winter wheat crop has yet to come, and what you're right. What we're reporting is Burlington Northern Santa Fe, who's doing what I just said, announced a month ago, I'm sorry, we can't pre-position cars for the 2014 wheat crop. Not only have we become very late on hauling out the 2013 crop, the 2014 crop, we can't pre-position the hopper cars to carry it out. Now, what the two things that stand out, Harley, and we put some of what I'm describing in a fact sheet, you'll find it in the EIR that was datelined April 25.
Also, it's on LaRouche Pack, I think.
We've
posted it on LaRouchePack.com.
Yeah, we're calling it impeachable offenses because Obama, for this alone, let alone doing the brinksmanship and insanity and abroad that's threatening thermonuclear war, but other than amidst everything else he's doing, this itself is grounds for impeachment, and any congressman that stands by and plays footsie with it and or does extols it, they're impeachable. And so back to the physical side of it, we have such a situation in the western states, we've said, where there's no water in large areas in the Southwest, but we've had certain unprecedented federal interventions. This doesn't mean that Obama's seen the light and been good about it, but certain agencies did such things as the following. The Surface Transportation Board, that's in the Transportation Department, even though it's been made relatively powerless, it issued a directive to Warren Buffett's Burlington Northern Santa Fe and the Canadian Pacific Railway around April 15th or so, saying, we order you to move fertilizer into the northern plains, because not only have they been carrying out so much oil, they aren't taking away last year's grain crop, wheat and other things. They didn't bring in the fertilizer for spring planting. Now, one thing, Harley, you're talking to us from the state of Texas, and you have if you had plenty of water, you can plant. You have a bigger window of time in which you can plant. But up there in the north, with the snow and ice a great deal of the year, you have to plant in a very timely way. You have a small window, right. And if you don't have the fertilizer there, you've messed up the entire 2014 crop. And that's currently what's potentially happening right now. Burlington Northern, today, well, we're pre-taping. You may or may not have said that. It's April 25. Today is the date on a Friday where Burlington Northern is ordered to supply a weekly report of how many fertilizer trains, how much tonnage they are providing into North Dakota, Minnesota, and these areas. They have to do it, and they have to do it. So we are reliant on potential orders of agencies to these bastards who run everything and make billions off it, even fulfilling their function. The same thing was done, Harley, with...
I just want to interrupt you again to make a point here on Warren Buffett. You know, when this was done by the Rockefeller family and the Harriman family controlling Union Pacific Railroad, where they had these monopolies that drove everyone else out, that prevented there from being a so-called free market, they were called robber barons. Today, this is what Buffett is doing with his control of rail, and he's considered a folk hero. And I think this gets also to this question of how they're able to do these policies which are going to kill people, in plain sight, and people don't react to them.
Yeah,
there's been a change in the culture.
That's it. Let's get back to that. I'll mention one more robber baron thing. That's good. You had a situation where a few months ago, you had, because of the robber baron faction of the world here, taking natural gas products, not natural gas, but propane, butane, I don't know what else. They call them NGLs, natural gas liquids, okay, processed. And mm-hmm. they were bringing them by pipeline down to export, probably out of Texas or Louisiana, to such a degree, because the Obama administration approved and welcomed all this, because we're supposed to be the new Saudi Arabia of the world,
right.
That there wasn't any, that people didn't have propane for heating for their schools or their households up in Minnesota, Wisconsin, parts of Iowa. The farmers couldn't pre-position propane that they might need.
And this was a cold winter.
Yes, same in New England. It affected them. It affected them in the South. And so there was a fury. And so two things happened. For the first time ever, the federal energy, or it's either Energy or Energy Regulatory Commission, issued an order, never done so before, and ordered one of the big gas pipelines, Harley, it's called Enterprise Products or something, and it's part of the hedge fund empire of the world, that they had to start stopping this north to south flow of these products and ship some propane up north. Okay, fine. By then, a woman died in North Dakota on an Indian reservation. She was in a trailer. She was only 61, and she couldn't get out, and she died strictly from freezing to death for lack of propane in the tank outside. Talk about robber barons. So this situation is not improving. We could go into you're going to see price rises, not just shortages, but food disappear. And this is what the Obama, the Warren Buffetts, the whole gang is supervising right now. And it's the end game. This is on such a mass scale. I hope we've all maybe brought that out in many ways to people. But the question is, take someone like Warren Buffett. It's as if you've had this cultural downshift so bad by reading People magazine every day or something. He, Oprah Winfrey, and others are considered celebrities, and they actually even literally have a certain number of these billionaire types.
Well, now you're talking about the Billionaires Club, which actually is really worth discussing, because this is where the power has shifted to as an oligarchy in the United States, where these are people who see themselves as part of the peerage with the British Empire, but that's what their policies are. And You know, I think you just go ahead with that, because Buffett is a key figure in this.
Yeah, and people might have seen the headlines 6 weeks ago or so about Buffett. He's worth maybe $53 billion. Oh, no, maybe 35. Who cares? You know, it's all funny money and it's evil when it's him. He's part of this billionaires club that there are 84 other people besides Warren Buffett whose money worth is like $1.7 trillion, which is more than half of the human race right now, more than three and a half billion people.
Billion people, yeah.
Yeah. So, and the other figures in this, let's go through a few, or include people like Bill Gates, who likewise had kind of had a concocted career so he could be an IT mogul like Warren Buffett, you're supposed to think is a railroad mogul, an insurance mogul. These are just operatives for this domination by the combination of the money Wall Street, City of London activities, and the fact that we're all supposed to become dumbed down and not see it for what it is. It's a combination.
Well, these are the modern cartels, because if you look at the cartels, you look at banking and insurance, you know, Buffett, it fits in that, so-called intelligence. I mean, Gates and the NSA, so many of these things are run through these new companies like Yahoo and others. But then the healthcare industry, raw materials, it's one grouping.
Yes.
Interlocking directorate.
Yeah, I'll mention.
They're the ones. Go ahead.
No, I mentioned your point is so clear. Bill Gates has Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, strategic investments in Canadian National, which has the fires, carries the oil, which serves part of Minnesota as well as throughout Canada. Bill Gates has investments in something, I think it's now called Echo Lab. I don't know if it's based in Canada or not, but it's a laboratory It's a kind of chemical innovation company that has supplied special resins for the blades on the turbines for the wind power. Wind farms all across the Midwest. It provides the special chemical mixes and cocktails for the fracking chemicals that are used for hydraulic fracturing down the wells for the oil and gas boom. This is such a blatant, when you start to step back and look at it, such a blatant, in-your-face, filthy operation against mankind. But it is an extinction policy. And on the physical side of it, look, here's a one way to look at it. If we were really in a situation of going all out for nuclear, plenty of fission nuclear power, so we could have the means to develop, to apply the scientific advances in harnessing fusion power, would you have hydraulic fracturing in some oil or gas shale formation somewhere in the world? Yeah, probably. You might have a place in Mongolia. You might have a place in Pennsylvania, even where the formation was so perfect, so easy. You do some hydraulic fracturing because you want to use it for a localized fertilizer purpose or some other purpose. You see, that's the point. But right now, do you know what manufacturing we have left for pipe? Harley, you're in Texas, and some of these pipe farms where they have stored beautiful metal pipes for the, I forget if they're 6 inches wide or whatever they are, for the casings down in these wells. All of our manufacturing capacity is serving the dead end of going in the Earth's crust for more oil and gas for diminishing returns, and while we're not going nuclear at all. So this is a deliberate dead-end policy in every way.
Well, and we're also not rebuilding bridges. We're not developing dams. The kind of work that would be done with NOAPA that would require an enormous amount of specialty steel. Instead, we have these steel companies being barely kept in business to do this, when there are other needs that are so much more pressing.
Yes.
Now, Marcia, what I'd like to do now is, given that this picture exists, just make very clear how this is an extermination policy, because it's not just a whole bunch of things add up to something that could be dangerous, but you can see it from the top, how the intent works. And I'd like you to just drive that point home, because our listeners have to go out and organize people to understand these are not just coincidences.
No, well, one thing, let's take a little side, remind ourselves of the how this was made deliberate. It isn't as if, gee, someone found a good way to frack and, okay, some guy right. in his garage. That's because that's good. Let's go back. Around the 1960s and 70s, when a number of interventions on behalf of literally the financial British Anglo-Dutch anti-nation empire, they moved in to put the nice name was deregulation and that kind of thing. So right. that I had referred to this before, railroads were deregulated. 1978, I just want to point out, I think that was the particular act that deregulated the gas situation, the gas drilling and transportation and pipeline and supply and gas utility companies in our nation. Okay, 1978, all right?
And also rail, I think, was 78.
Okay, that could be the same year. Then this was further advanced over the 1980s. Then you get to into the 1990s, when you also got the internationalizing of this process. We had the famous North American Free Trade Act. Before that, the Canadian United States Free Trade Act, and so you had electricity deregulation as well in the late 1990s. The laws were passed and bang, they went into effect around 2000-2001. And then that's when the Harley, you can always say more about the coming in of George W. But yeah. Dick Cheney in January 2001, who had been associated with Halliburton, a big player in all of this, a big player in a lot of the oil, gas, and evil and foreign dirty operations in the world. Dick Cheney in January 2001 became head of the Energy Task Force in Washington.
Right.
And served that way until May or June. They released their Energy Task Force report, and he met throughout this period with all of the major companies, the international, national operatives of the famous names, everyone from Royal Dutch Shell to Valero to everything that existed. But during
go ahead, then I'll make a point.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I want you to make this point. I mean, this was during the time when electricity, because of deregulation, was spiking
in
California.
This is the California crisis.
That's it.
Where the governor of California asked the federal government to intervene against the fraud that was carried out largely by Enron from the 1996 deregulation of electricity in California. Prices were spiking 400% to 3,000% higher. Pacific Gas and Electric was forced into bankruptcy. The state had to lay out tens of billions of dollars just to keep electricity going. It was all stolen. Money was stolen. And when Cheney was asked to intervene, he said, well, this is the free market. And of course, at the same time, Warren Buffett and Lord Rothschild were plotting to bring Schwarzenegger in as governor of California by dumping Gray Davis, who happened to be the governor when this was occurring.
Right, because Gray Davis had instincts or impulses. Well, let's do something. Let's stop this. No, he was shoved out.
Protect the people.
Yeah. And then, okay, fast forward a bit. Well, December that of 2001, Enron went bankrupt, and that's a whole, because of course this is what the thing is about.
They went bankrupt, but their model was continued, which includes turning commodities into financialization instruments, so that we see this up to this day, that J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, and others are cornering commodity markets and raw materials and electricity.
Right, and in fact, it was in those ensuing years, soon after 2001, 2002, whenever that Warren Buffett bought a key gas pipeline from the Rocky Mountains to California,
right,
anticipating mega profits there. In 2005, the Energy Act of 2005 was passed by our government, And besides many other things in it, including compulsory annual biofuels, that is corn for ethanol volumes that had to be met. In addition, in 2005, there was a specific clause that said that there should be no government oversight of, because of the free markets, of what chemicals would be used in the compressed water to go down into these shale formations for fracking oil and gas, because right. that would inhibit the free market and the free competitive. What a bunch of BS. It would inhibit Halliburton and the other big players in this, and it was known at the time. This is called the Halliburton waiver. Everyone knows it was the Halliburton clause, and that's 2000.
This is also what government is supposed to do. It's supposed to protect individuals from private privilege, and this is our Constitution. And what we've seen, what you've just been describing under Bush Cheney and then under Obama, has been a series of acts that have made government toothless and given all the power to these private speculators who don't give a damn for the people of this country. In fact, they want to reduce the population.
Yeah, that's it. We should mention here, so we could go on with it, but this is the nature of it. In 2009, I believe, is the day when a gang got together in New York City of many of these types. I think Warren Buffett and Bill Gates might have been the conveners. It included Michael Bloomberg, Ted Turner, George Soros, Oprah Winfrey, and some other people. And it was completely hush-hush. Even the staff had to stay outside the doors. But the discussion was specifically on it. It, let's face it, the world has to be depopulated. Ted Turner has used the number of 2 billion people, for example. So that's only getting rid of 5 billion people.
The latest from Turner is that every family should be mandated by law to be limited to one child. And then he said that would bring the world population, I think he said in 50 years, down to 2 billion.
Okay.
When Lyndon LaRouche has been citing repeatedly the Queen of England and Prince Philip and others who use the figure of reduce the population to 1 to 2 billion in discussing this as a deliberate genocide. And this is what, as you're just reporting, Ted Turner and others are discussing in closed-door meetings. That is genocide. People were hanged at Nuremberg for plotting that under Hitler. Now they're much more sophisticated through the Obamacare and through other, what you're describing, the fracking and everything else, but it's the same intent.
Yeah, mass extermination of people by mass elimination of the means of people to exist. We had a year or so ago, there's a Seattle-based outfit that does good work in mapping the counties where the death rate is increasing in our nation. It's in southern Oklahoma, especially the Indian lands there. It's in parts of West Virginia. EIR put out some of those maps last summer, 2013. And so the death rate, these actions are being taken to increase the death rate of people. And I think that we can say here, we can discuss it more. That's why we're talking about all this. This is yet more grounds for impeachment, Obama, but there's no fooling around with any of this process of letting biofuels continue, letting this fracking continue, and letting the Warren Buffett and all of these, the pipeline railway manipulations continue. What happened is I'll give you a couple of examples. These oil spills in, there's been really dramatic ones in the Dakotas, in Minnesota, as well as you may have seen a year ago in Quebec, where many people died. There an oil train ran right into the town.
Right.
Some of the congressmen, either Republicans or Democrats, are saying, okay, let's set up a national rail safety task force to try and tell these railroads to behave better. Well, forget it. You know, it's not the time for that. There was never any time for that. That is just the worst kind of cowardice, and it's And otherwise, you have those on the Senate and House side, Republican and Democrat, just saying, being worse than stupid, they are being venal and evil, and they're complicit in killing people. Mary Landrieu in Louisiana is now the Energy Committee chairman, and they held a hearing before the recess where she said, it's wonderful, the shale gas revolution, we want to export it all because it's so great. Obama approved the liquefying a lot of this new boom in gas for LNG, liquefied natural gas exports, and we want to have it go through Louisiana. Lisa Murkowski said the same thing about Alaska. This, unfortunately, this is the level to which these lawmakers have sunk. But on the other hand, that just defines our task. It doesn't mean we can sit around and complain. And they're coming back,
Marcia,
next week.
It's important to look at the other element of this, which is that this is being sold as the one source of expanded economic activity in the country. And what it really gets at is the fact that there is no recovery, that in fact people are desperate. States are desperate. Cities are desperate. The population as a whole is suffering from high-priced food and gasoline. I mean, if we have all this oil and gas, why is gas at the pump continuing to go up? So you have deprivation, real deprivation. And so they're holding this up as the great source of the future, when in fact it's destroying the very future they say they're protecting.
Yes, that's exactly it. It'll mean millions more jobs. That's what these various congressmen were saying. And take California. That said, one of the congressmen said, look at North Dakota. It has 3%. It has next to no unemployment at all. Of course, there's North Dakota with no fertilizer, no ability to get the crop from last year out. No, and what's everyone living in a dozen people to a trailer home because there's no. This is supposed to be called a successful model. And I'll tell you, take the Marcellus Shale. Harley, you're there in the great Permian Basin and Eagle Ford and all these fine Barnett Shale. Take Pennsylvania. The three governors, Tom Ridge, Ed Rendell, and Tom Corbett, what did they go for it? They wanted some money for the budget of Pennsylvania, which was once, in its western part, a Great Lakes industrial powerhouse. It was a coal state, mm-hmm. and Pittsburgh. And all of that's been shut down by the people we have just named, the enemy, the British Empire operation. So that, to the degree Harrisburg, the state capital's in bankruptcy. It's been bankrupt for 3 years. But these governors and others went along and said, no problem, frack all you like, go everywhere. And so there's that's because it said it'll give you money. And on an international scale now, this is proposed for Mexico. Strictly this empire operation is doing everything in Mexico to say, change your constitution, change your historical, famous nationalized oil company, and welcome us frackers in to actually destroy your country and kill your people. And even it's so.
But don't worry, you'll get campaign contributions if you support us.
Okay, well, that's the answer. Even in jolly old England, which is the home of not the English people, but the home of the City of London, the London operations, and the Queen, David Cameron was present with Obama some weeks ago at the world at a world summit in Europe. Okay, and Obama gave a speech and said, "We are now fracking. We have a great boom at home. Europe, you can rely on us. You don't have to rely on Russia. It'll only take a few years. I mean, forget about the details." But David Cameron said, "And yes, in our country, even in the British Isles, we're now going to go have fracking by the end of the year. And the way it's going to be acceptable to everyone is all the local villages can have the revenue. They can get the money, just what you said, Harley.
Yeah.
It's just an appeal to they can get the money. Since having casinos now doesn't get us enough money for the local school budget, does it? You can get it through fracking."
Well, and with the price of food going to skyrocket. Or the alternative is what you mentioned earlier about there's still frozen food coming from Mexico. What about the countries now as we destroy our farms in this country? We become increasingly dependent on imported food. First of all, there's the whole question of quality. But secondly, what are people in those countries going to eat?
This is part of that May 2009 meeting in New York City of these bastards. Let's call them the robber bastards, right? It's worse than the barons. And Bill Gates especially, who has the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation with Warren Buffett, the biggest in the world, you should call them philanthropo-fascists. This is the system that they are pushing and promote, that companies that we've known for years, Green Giant, Del Monte, Dole, they're already, so to speak, sourcing a great deal of their product from South Africa, from Chile, from Dominican Republic, where Haiti is having imposed genocide on the same island of Hispaniola. They're bringing in food, processed fruits and vegetables from China, from Indonesia. Do you know, you take a company like Dole, until the current drought in California, the practice is Dole takes industrial vats of peaches and pears, ships them from California to Thailand, where the cheap labor put them in those little containers for children and ships them back to the United States. This is typical of the entire world. Now, one more example might not make a difference to people. That's not the point. But what I'm putting to everyone is it's the end of the line. Now, there isn't even anything here. And people, the places abroad, like Mexico, desperate for water, like Dominican Republic, that's now exporting melons to the U.S. that used to come from Texas. This is an extinction policy in the short term. That's the message.
Marcia, we're down to 3 minutes, and I want to just come up with the quick solutions, but I think the first one is that Obama's got to be impeached. Because as long as he's in there's no solution to the war danger, there's no solution to the financial crisis, and as you pointed out, he is totally in line with these philanthropo-fascists. I like that. And a complete puppet of the Queen. But what steps have to be taken to get out of this paradigm?
Well, go for him. And go for the lead duck, Warren Buffett. Have some fun with all your friends and enemies. You know, they want to gossip about the rail mogul, and aren't these celebrity philanthropo fascists interesting? He should be ousted. But go for Obama. You get this initiated. Get this next week when Congress comes back. Force the issue of impeachment, and then we can initiate short term, the long term projects and so forth. We need, they aren't that long term, but get the North American Water and Power Alliance back in action. And this means right now. You can have your water board, you can have your school board, you can have your community, any association pass resolutions demanding this. And then with this mentality, one thing, Harley, all of these cowardly, unsavory congressmen, I think they would start to worry what's going to happen to them once this is initiated. And so
is already happening. If you look at what we're doing with the Keisha Rogers campaign, we are meeting with water boards. We are meeting with people who meet with local congressmen. The same thing with what Michael Steger is doing with his campaign in San Francisco, where he's going into the Central Valley, into the Sacramento legislature, and so on. So these campaigns are spearheading the intervention, but everywhere you are, you can do something on this. And really, it's connected. Don't separate the impeachment of Obama from the crimes of Obama. To get rid of Obama without solving or overturning the policies, the criminal policies, would be foolish.
Yeah, and then that's it. With that mentality, with that momentum, with that inspiration and that morale, then we can take all the necessary immediate short-term measures, whether it's trucking in water or commissioning food from Florida or elsewhere that isn't in a drought to get us through a couple years. See, that would be the joy and fun of it. And farmers and other experts know how to do that. But get Obama out, go for this, and we can do it all.
And we can take some of these philanthropists and let them sit together and eat their meals together and talk about the good old days when they were in power and trying to kill people. I mean, you look at Ted Turner, the guy is so deluded, he thought Jane Fonda's boobs were real.
Okay, well, that's very encouraging.
All right, well, we'll end on that one. So, Marcia, thank you very much for joining us today. This has been another edition of The LaRouche Show, and we will be back next Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time.
Thank you.